Oh, it's Miracle Nutrition with Hardy Wine. Miracle Nutrition with Hardy Wine. Miracle Nutrition with Hardy Wine. Oh, Miracle Nutrition with Hardy Wine. Miracle Nutrition with Hardy Wine. Miracle Nutrition with Hardy Wine. Miracles can happen to you. First thing, tell people who you are. Who am I? I am Hardy White, my friend, and I would like to be a sort of guide, an internal docent. Now, by internal docent, I don't mean the kind of little tiny tour guides that go inside of people that take a submarine and a group of folks and shrink them down, and then you insert the tour group in suppository form, and they go have a tour of your colon in this tiny little submarine. Now, that is an industry all its own, and I am not part of that, nor do I object to it. If you've ever taken one of these tours, they're really fascinating, and you learn so much. You go, what's hiding in that diverticuli? Oh, it's a peanut piece. And everybody waves at it, takes pictures, and it runs its course. But that's not the kind of God that I am. I have more to do with the nervous system. I'm a docent up in your nerves like that, right? I get on your nerves, I get in them. And I would like to also enter your mind palace. I say mind palace. We all know it's a duplex and a small one. Bless your heart. I don't know what's in your mind or what's on it, but I'd like to inject myself in it and be a sort of voice in your head. Oh, my goodness. Why not? Because I think the voice in your head sometimes is not doing a very good job, is it? It's saying all these negative things. You say, oh, I'm a failure, I'm not good at this, or nobody likes me, or all that kind of thing. Oh, I would fire that voice and hire Hardy White. And Hardy White will say things like, oh my goodness, it's wonderful in here. Look at you. Your head's all intact. That's an accomplishment. Give yourself a pat on the back. You haven't lost giant chunks of your head or something. You say, well, that doesn't happen. It does, though. And nothing against you if you've lost a big piece of your head or something. And things get lopped off in accidents, and you can survive them. And again, no one's blaming you if you're missing a big chunk of your skull or brain or anything. But give yourself a little credit if you still have it. My goodness. Now, the rest of your body, who knows? Stuff gets caught in junk, gets ripped off. But as long as you just your head is intact for a while, that's where most of the journey takes place, I think. It's all in our minds, isn't it? Well, the body is contributing. It's mainly making the trip worse. It's like you get a vacation. I got a free vacation to Paris. Oh, that's fantastic. What's the catch? Oh, you got to take three elderly people who aren't related. So I don't know whether that would, that's not a bad thing. It's just sort of burdensome, right? That's what like having a body is. And they don't give you instructions. Well, they do. Maybe they do. Who reads them? If they, even they gave you an instruction booklet with your body, it'd be like, I know. I'll figure it out. It's intuitive. And it largely is. I guess, and there's no real instructions. Everything is different. All bodies are different. They're generally the same. But my goodness, we're so varied. We're not so varied that, only other humans could tell the difference, really. I think to probably other creatures, we all look relatively the same. And I don't blame them. I feel that way with oysters or something. Although they are very different. You can tell they're different. I just can't tell how they're different. That's the thing. I met an oyster, and we talked for a good long time. But I embarrassed myself at a party. I went up to an oyster that was not this oyster, and I said, hey, and it wasn't them. And they all have totally different features. I realize this, but I just can't. There's no context. But as a person, oh my goodness, I genuinely recognize faces. And then sometimes I don't. Oh, bless us all. You know, things work and then they don't work. You think that about your body is like that. It's just like your car or something like else that you think is going to be dependable and isn't. And really, it was just your messed up expectations that are responsible for the disappointment. Because look at it. Look at that cobbled together thing. I'm talking about both your body and the car. And both Ford and God, I think, have things in common. And I don't want to go into them, but they're horrible. Oh, are you dissing God? No. First of all, there's a hearty, I did contribute something to philosophy. And it's almost like Pascal's wager. And that goes this. If you curse God and there is a God and God is all forgiving, you're fine. If there's no God, you're also fine. So really, you can't go wrong. There's a jealous God. Jealous God's weird. That implies another God. So that can't be the any kind of single creator. I hear you. So I think when I hear a jealous God, I think of like a pantheon. And that'd be lovely too. I wouldn't mind that. Oh my goodness, we could all cope with that. I can't believe that we don't really have that. As in love as we are with characters and everything. This is the ultimate. Y'all think you love Marvel? Oh my gosh, if you were living in a culture with multiple gods, it's fantastic. Look at there's a blur. I'll watch Hindu religious movies where the gods are the superheroes. It's fantastic. So I'd love that. That's a wonderful blurred line. And then you can get into some kind of violent religious conflict at the theater with others. And that brings it to a whole new level. You can't do that as much with Star Wars and not look silly. But when you say it's like, oh, you know, but a Jedi is my religious belief. And we could be going there. Oh, that'd be something. I wish I knew what movies were going to turn into religious myth. But I've been pulling for Three Stooges, so you know I'm pulling for Shemp. That could be. We all mold the future. We're making it right now. You think, oh, I'm being battered about by a sea of events and fates. I am but a driven leaf. I'm floating upon a stream over which I have no control and one which will ultimately consume me. Yeah, but my goodness, there's so much to do along the way. Just because you're careening down some sort of whitewater river towards a waterfall and your demise, I mean, what are you going to, nothing you can do about it. And that frees you up a little bit because you don't have to steer. Exactly. So look at your free, what are you going to do with your free hands?
Banjo.
Banjo. You can play banjo or something.
But then you're going,
listen, it's inevitable. If everything of all existence is happening on that stream that's going over into that void, then I would take it out of the equation. You know, if you see, oh, there's a constant there. No, I don't really need it. It's the fabric on which all this painting is painted. I don't need to concentrate on that. Don't look at the finger or you will miss all of the heavenly glory, said Bruce Lee. And I think, were you going to not listen to him? He just slapped you 150 times. He just reached into your heart, gave it some sort of massage. Fixed some kind of hole in an artery with gum and pulled his hand out. You didn't even know what was going on. That's how quick Bruce Lee was. He could move through space and time. And he's not dead. He's just moving so fast, nobody can detect him. Oh, you really want to be the voice in my head? I do. Why not? I know I'll be more positive. And, you know, I will, I will never abuse you the way your voice does, but I will disabuse you.
What's that mean?
What does that mean?
Yeah.
That means I will take away any, I'm going to try to take away any illusions that I think are bad and replace them with good illusions.
What, replace them with truth?
Oh, you don't want truth. That's too much. That's strong. That's too strong. We're just going to get you somewhere where you're comfortable. You're just resting comfortably. No, my goodness, we're shooting for joy. Oh, come with me. You haven't lost any of your head. You're not St. Denis.
Saint-Denis.
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 Saint-Denis. Saint-Denis. Saint-Denis. Saint-Denis, missing the top of his head. I'm not sure how it happened. He was decapitated, and he went, wait a minute, now, how come on? Come on. And he moved. You go, you moved! And they missed his neck or something. They hit him mid-forehead. Everybody's laughing. But he's also super fun to sculpt. And so you'll see on cathedrals and everything, say, who's that one with the flat top there? It looks like Flat Top from Chester Gould's Dick Tracy. Say, that's not Flat Top. That's Flat Top Jr. Say, no, that's not Flat Top Jr. That's Saint-Denis. That's Saint-Denis. That's Saint-Denis. That's Saint-Denis. And the other thing about it, like, say you're a pigeon, that's like a patio. So, I don't know, the real St. Denis now, there's going to be, it'll be squishier, there'd be brains in there and everything. And we had a lovely, back when people ate brains, we had a lovely ceramic St. Denis brain-serving dish. So, it was his head, and then you serve the brains. What kind of brains do you eat? Well, they're not real brains. It's made of suet, which is also, but it's not brain. This is all traditional dishes.
Why are you putting that in my head?
Listen, I'm just trying to loosen you up a little bit because I want you to let go. You've got this death grip on some really bad ideas and they're not helping you. And I just want you to let go. I'll fall. Just don't worry about it.
But what if I let go of some preconceptions, if I let go of my existing worldview?
You're fine. You won't go anywhere. They're just stories. We're going to put new stories in there.
But then I'll know they're not true.
Exactly. That's good. You know. But they have the same effect. You've cried at a movie, haven't you? Oh, yes. You can. Self-delusion is so much better than being deluded by someone else. There's some things you should just do yourself. You don't need them done. Cutting your hair isn't one, but deluding, yes. So self-delude, don't cut your own hair, don't do like even your own surgeries or something. I know some of you are like, well, I'm a spy and I was in another country and I was shot and so I went to a safe house and I had to dig the bullet out by myself. I go, okay, Ronan. But like that's an exception. Mostly you want to get a professional to do it. A wonderful gift. For if you do have a spy in the family, is a little pocket surgical kit like that. Say if you need to perform surgery on yourself, and it's got you know, fentanyl and string and I don't know what, a little shot of Blanton's that I got from John Wick and all that kind of stuff. Oh, how's your heart? I don't mean your literal heart.
It's failing.
Not that one.
Well, that's a big deal.
Okay.
So that's what I'm thinking about mostly these days.
Okay, well, no, I'm talking to a lot of people, so not everybody's physical heart is failing, but I acknowledge that, and I recognize you don't go anywhere. But we're also going to talk about those whose hearts are heavy, and I want to lift them up. Oh, well, how you going to lift them up? Well, traditionally, helium. Pump it full of helium. I don't mean... literally. Maybe I do. We haven't tried it. I'd kill you. Well. But maybe just becoming a sort of balloon. What would be, just to continue the analogy metaphor, what's the helium that would, how can we, what gas, how do we release gas into our hearts in a way that we float up and that we rise above, unless... you were acrophobic, and then you don't want to rise up too high. So just maybe float comfortably a few feet above the ground. So even if you did fall, you'd be okay. Oh, I will catch you. And I'm in your head, but I can jump out. I can get out quickly. I've always had an escape plan. All voices in your head have to. Now, I am probably going to, at some point, give you some secret, sacred information that I'm not supposed to give out. And if it's found out by my society that I'm in, I'll get kicked out because you're not supposed to just give things out without context. Do you understand? So I could tell some stories that just don't sound right unless you know more of the story. For instance, a lot of times people would try to detach mysticism from a specific religion and apply it to everybody. And really, things have context. You know, they work within that. So if you're waiting tables, you work at a restaurant, or you're in the service industry, your mysticism arises out of the thing that you do all the time. It isn't something from a faraway, distant mountain. It's your world, your life. So that's what matters. That's the context. It's about the stories that your customers tell you or something like that. Or it's about the fried chicken plate you're serving to Mrs. Jones. She comes in all the time. If it was the 80s, she'd be smoking. But now there's no smoking in the restaurant. But making sense of Mrs. Jones and making sense of the chicken and making sense of that sometimes people are nice to you and sometimes they are not. And that all takes place within your life, not some crazy old place. So there's an ordinariness to the mysticism that works. There is a way of being woo-woo and just seeming like you're going about your work and that your ideas are not crazy or fantasy. They are simply a way of acknowledging that our whole world is self-created. Now, you say, well, why isn't it like I want it? Well, there's a lot of people self-creating, and so there's all bumping into one another, so you can't get anything done. That's just, it's like getting a plot. You get a plot at the community garden, and it's small. So, you know, nobody's really going to be able to raise enough carrots to build a carrot log cabin, which is a fantasy of mine. Oh, it would dry out. I don't know. I haven't gotten that far. Please. The thing with an idea like that is you have to be flexible. So if your dream is I want to build a carrot log cabin and you come to learn more about carrots and discover the lack of feasibility of using them as a building material, then you might replace carrots with something else in your plan. But the plan essentially stays the same. So the carrot log cabin might end up being something like a, I don't know, shredded wheat tiny house. You know, but it's close. And that just means that you've adjusted and you've paid attention. But it doesn't mean that you've stopped being imaginative or living slightly outside of the world. Oh, that's the way to do it. What are you waiting for? Life is both short and long.
That's a paradox.
A lot of things I don't say specifically because of people that contradict everything.
No, you don't.
And I'll tell you why.
No, you won't.
And I have a problem with knee-jerk contradiction. Because I think that if you want to think something the opposite, it should be hours or days later. So you hear an idea, and instead of immediately going, yeah, but you haven't thought about it. You've got to think about something at least 20 minutes for it to even go into kind of long-term memory. So everything that when you say that, you just maybe you're threatened by the rightness of an idea. And you say, well, that guy can't be completely right. So I'm going to offer, also, I like to offer balance. Because a lot of times, and because it's infuriating that I'm not as smart as you. I understand that. But it doesn't mean that something precious isn't going to drop from my pocket. It's just as likely. So hear me out before you contradict anything. And understand that there is a place between right and wrong, not morally, but possible and impossible. And these are paradoxes, and we encounter them quite a bit, I think. And they're interesting. And if you avoid them by trying to contradict things and not say, well, how can these opposites be true at the same time, that you are depriving yourself of one of the great pastimes of the human mind, and that is paradox bathing. Have you done any paradox bathing? Oh, jump right in. Just jump right into the heap. What's a heap? You know, you start saying, oh, I love these areas. These are gray areas. Dwell in them. And you will see how large and wonderful they are. And they will give you insights as you bathe in the paradox. We are locked in one. So I say we. I speak as if I am all people sometimes, or I speak as if I'm going to live forever or have. So I'll say we when I mean human beings. But, you know, I wasn't there. So I'll say, you know, it used to be we'd take care of one another. What's this we? I wasn't there. You know, we'll probably one day live on Mars. We? I am speaking in language I did not invent. Oftentimes, I am sharing jokes I did not write. Certainly, all the ideas and the foundations for them, everything, was already here. And if I've done anything, it's just scramble them up and shoot them out in a different order. Maybe I've added to things through my experience. But I have not contributed to human culture any more than my computer has contributed to Microsoft Word. Yeah, it's added some documents, but it didn't make the software. Now, all this thought and these ideas, it's going on even when we're not here. And when you form a little brain, it pops in and it seeps into this thing, this organic thing, and then that thing rots and goes away. And those things that were in it sort of go and dissipate, but they also get shot out into other brains like I'm doing now. So you can say, when Hardy goes, there all the ideas in his head go. Oh, no, nonsense. They're all archived. Or you've got some of them. They all stay here. The only thing that goes is this goo. But it all stays here. Well, you're not conscious of them. Exactly. What I'm saying is that while you are alive, you are immortal. You've always been here, and you always will be. When you are dead, you are going to be the only person, basically, who doesn't know that. So, you will never know that you were not there. If you never know you're not there, if there's never no not you, then how is that not immortal? So everything about you that is conscious of an immortal self. That you are literally mortal or going to die really doesn't have anything to do with that, I don't think. That's sort of a separate issue. Yeah, you know, that's, my goodness, what happens to the computer when it breaks down and get rid of it? But I got my files backed up.
Well, yeah, but that individual computer.
That's why we get sad for robots. Can we start to recognize ourselves? And we recognize that paradox. You say, well, the robot's talking to me right now, and it's saying things when I shut it down. It's like Doctor Who.
Well, he's going to regenerate, and he's still going to be Doctor Who.
Yeah, but he won't. This one won't know it.
Oh,
the other one will maybe know it, but this one won't.
Oh,
and there's a sadness there. A mano no aware, isn't there? There's a temporary fleeting thing. It's wonderful. Time is wonderful. It also brings us this pain. But I would say just hope there's no afterlife, because that could be a melancholy torture. That would mess me up. Then everything I'm saying is wrong.
Oh, when Alexandra David Neal revealed all the secrets of the Tibetan lamas, she basically said that there is a level of brain hack, of self-delusion, of hallucination that is indistinguishable from reality. So that you can conjure a tulpa, but you have to do a lot of things to your body. You have to stress out pretty bad. And then you will see somebody walking around. Will others see it? Possibly. Depends on how stressed out they are, too. So there's a possibility of shared hallucination like that. Now, if a shared hallucination is absolutely indistinguishable from reality. Oh, well, what does that mean? I don't know. No, I do know, but I'm going to switch subjects. Because, again, I don't want to. I just feel like a lot of the wizards in my group are listening and are going to come and start knocking on my door and say, what are you're telling them about a paradox bathe? I'm trying not to. I'm just talking about silly things. Oh, I'm talking about sticks and stones. And that's what I do, basically. Is it sticky? I like to think so. What does that mean? It means that I'm using entertainment principles, not necessarily well, but I'm trying to be conscious of the fact that we require some excitement in our life, that we require surprise, that we want to encounter truth, and truth is often wacky paradox. It's often watching people be ridiculous when they know better. Like the Three Stooges. That's why I love it. I love it because there's a combination of dignity and indignity going on at the same time. They are fools, and yet they are humans. They are frustrated and deluded, and they're confidence is misplaced, and all these wonderful things that I know to be true about human beings, but watching them exaggerated is, to me, hilarious. And I love it, or at least, at the very least, it's delightful. Because I don't feel like I don't feel alienated from my world. I am right to think that I am living in an absolute carnival of madness. This is a wacky place, and nobody knows what they're doing, and everybody is making it up, and the stuff they're making up is often horrible. So I'm going to make stuff up too and compete with it. I'm very, very tired of how limited some people's imaginations are, and I'm very, very tired of how destructive some people's imaginations are. My goodness, if I did have one of those suppository submarines and I could go inside people and explore them, I would make a beeline for their heart. And I would look around in there and I'd say, what sort of injury was done here? Was somebody mean to you? Kick over your bike or saying, you're big, you got boobies. I don't know what the kids say. And that could stick with you. Now, you could react. Let's say you get teased when you're young. And you react. And you're scared. And you lash out. And you hurt somebody. Now you're the baddie. Now you go, I'm the baddie. Now you feel like the baddie. And then you do something else like that. And you keep being the baddie. We know this from movies and everything. It's just that's a tragedy. It's a tragedy when a victim becomes a victimizer. And there,
We know that there might be this place, this fulcrum, this crux, this nexus, this glingma, lambatsatantakadabanda, this point at which the heart is salvageable. And we can pull it back from that. And we can say, oh, you who have been bullied, who feel like a victim, reach out your hand to me. I just let it be Hardy White right now. I'm not some special magical being. I'm not going to lie to you. I'm an actor. But here it goes. Now, but still, reach out your hand. If I was Luke Skywalker, say, oh, you're Luke Skywalker. I said, well, no, I'm Mark Hamilton. That's not his name. But say, oh, which is it? Just, do you want it to be Luke Skywalker? Yes, then I'm Luke Skywalker. Give me your hand. If you're feeling that way, let me look in my eyes. This fear, I understand that. Oh, my goodness, nobody wants to be a victim. But I've got to tell you, this helplessness, this is part of it. This is all there is. You must become at peace with this helplessness. He said, well, the person victimized me is not helpless. Well, they really are. And I don't, you know, I know that's no comfort. But we need to navigate it. Not fix it necessarily. We're going to fix you. We're going to fix ourselves right now. Oh, come with me. Come with me. There's a new year. You can start over. No, there's no starting over. Yes, like a clean slate. There's no clean slates. There's only messed up, marred slates. We'll get rid of the slate. No, that's precious. That beautiful messed up slate. That sketchbook page with all those started and aborted sketches. Well, you've erased so hard that you've torn the paper. Don't throw that away. That's the portrait we're making. That's the thing. I know. Just go with it. It's chaos. It's wonderful we're living in a Pollock painting. And you're being splashed on a canvas. Ride with me now. I'm going to tell you how to splash, paint splash surf. Really?
Yes.
Yeah, you're on a torrent. There's no navigating. There's only surfing. I'll teach you how to surf. I can't teach you how to navigate. That's silly. I look around me. I think there's a great deal of silliness. You're not going to get through this. Oh, reach out your arms like this. Put them out like, I'm that big Brazilian statue of Jesus. Standing on a mountain. And now I'm a little tiny mole living in a cave. Is this guided meditation? Yes, I think all art is a sort of guided meditation. You take people places and you map out the world and show it to them. Come with me. I was so excited when I would get to Disney World as a child. Not by the actual place, but by the map. I would look at it and say, look at all these different places. How they've been represented. All the possibilities, we could go there. I know they're all, every one of them is disappointing in their own way. But look at the vision for it. I see what's going on here. What a twisted worldview. But that's all right. Oh, bless, frontier land. I just think of meditate on a map of Disney World sometime. And you'll realize, future. Like they're all aspects of what? The future is to Frontierland. You know, never is there a never, I don't even remember, fantasy world. And then gritty adult land or something. I don't think they have that. They ought to, though. They ought to just go with the times and have a Skid Row or something. Why not? Oh, you can have, can you have fun anywhere? No. Absolutely not. Can you? Please stop asking me. I don't know. I can't answer specific questions like that unless they really don't have an answer. So, what direction is the sun? Right there. It's up there. It's over there. And that's what I feel like with directions. Are we headed somewhere? Yes and no, I think. We're not really headed anywhere, just like my talking. And I think that's a lot of, it discourages maybe people from listening to me sometimes. I understand that. Say, well, I feel like he's just rambling. He's not going anywhere. What is going anywhere? Where is there to go? I think a lot of times when we look at stories, TV shows, it's about expectations. And we like a certain percentage of them to be met. So let's say you're watching a Columbo. You have certain expectations for a Columbo episode. He's going to be asking questions. He's going to pretend he doesn't know. You know who did it in the first few scenes. That's a Columbo thing. You have to see who the killer is. And then you watch Columbo figure it out while they play with the suspect. Or, as they say in Britain, the suspect. Yeah, like a cat playing with its food. And then, with the fulfilled expectations, Columbo's got a cigar. He's going, I've got one more question. All those things are there. There's some surprises sprinkled in. So it's not the same exact experience every time. I want it to be the same, but a little bit different. One time I was asked to participate in a podcast of 1001 Arabian Nights, and that's a similar kind of thing. And I was saying, gosh, that's just like the Three Stooges. So every episode, it's the Three Stooges. It's Mo, Larry, and Curly or Shemp, or... And they aren't always doing the same thing, but they're the same guys, and it's the same sort of world. Sometimes it's a different time, but I have something to hold on to. They have the same personalities. They're going to do basically the same stuff, but with a lot of variations. So my expectations are met, but also I'm surprised. And that is most of art. Then we encounter art that's nothing but surprise, that your expectations are completely shattered and thrown out. I don't know where I am. I am disoriented by this piece of art, either some kind of experimental film, or maybe I'm listening to music. So you tune into WFMU. And so I want to listen to some music, and you hear... Oh, stop, Hardy. No. If I do it long enough, somebody will take it as a clip and play it on their show. But my point being is, there's nothing to grab hold of there. Your expectations are worthless. There's just surprise. Oops, all surprises. No actual cereal. And is there anything wrong with that? Well, yeah, because you can be disoriented or you can start... I'm listening to you talking. I don't always follow you, and I drift off and I start thinking my own stuff. I have room for that in what I do. That does not bother me. You think it bothers me if you don't hang on every single word? I'm a human being speaking to you for 1 hour. It's like a lecture. If I were Richard, curse word, Feynman, giving you the most profound speech of physics you ever heard, there'd probably be some point in the hour where you drift off and start thinking about navel lint or something. It's a good thing. This is fine. It's not about me. I don't need you to give me a review of every bite of my pastry. I'm just happy that you come back for the donuts. And you don't have to tell me every bite. That was a good one. I really like the powdered donuts. You don't even have to say, today I got the donuts. So I didn't even eat any. That's fine, too. That's good. I had a really close friend who I know does not regularly listen to my show. That's the way close friendship works. Who said that it was like panning for gems in North Carolina or something. You know, that was the ratio of enlightened things that I would say. That's great. Why? Because people pay to go to those damn places. knowing that there's a very, very slim chance they're going to get something precious, right? Now, what if there was a place where you say, okay, you're guaranteed you're going to put your pan in there and you're guaranteed you're going to pull out thousands of dollars, really, of precious gems. How much do you think it would cost to get in? That isn't the way it works. The way it works is that the greatest fun is where there is a chance of getting something, but mostly a chance of not getting anything. It's the going through the stuff. You go to a rummage sale. You look through 90% is garbage until you find this thing. This, well, I don't even know what it's for.
I think it was for caponizing chickens.
Not, I don't know.
You get, why does it say Radio Shack?
Yeah, see, that's why I don't think it's for that. But anyway, you have to, you don't mind looking through a bunch of junk. I know for a fact that some of you go to these vinyl record stores and that you will flip through these albums, these LPs, endlessly looking for something. Just a, I did it recently. And I went through, most of it's going to be just undesirable to you. But I also walked into a store in New York. You know, you walk into the, you go down to a basement, you know, and say, what is this? You know, like in Chinatown or something. And Kurt Gottschalk's playing a set on a one-stringed guitar. And I just wanted to shout out to Kurt. Because I love him. And let's say they have like two or three records. That's not going to hold my attention. I must stay for Kurt. But that's not going to, you know, there's nothing to leaf through. It might be a great album, that one album. But that's not the way that my friends and I like to go through piles of junk. And I'm a big pile of junk. And I have been giving you consistently every show that I have done on this station for the past 12, 13 years are like I open up an abandoned storage unit every week. And you show up, not because you know what's going to be in the abandoned storage unit, because let's see what's in there. Now, of course, sometimes you're going to open it up. It's going to be the Al Capone vault of creative endeavor. And I have done that. And I have stood on stages and thought moments in to a piece, oh no. But you must also banish that thought always, because you never know what you're going to get. And being lost is actually pretty good. It's good to be lost. It's good to say, well, this isn't going how I thought. That's a gift sometimes. If it goes how you thought, you might zone out. Well, this was just like the last time, and the time before that, and the time before that, and I've stopped paying attention. Now, we don't want to have to be alert all the time. Nobody wants to have an adrenaline rush all the time. What's that? Nobody wants to be in a heightened state all the time, but it's great to do it temporarily as long as you know that you're going to be able to rest. That's the important thing. I promise you that I will always let you rest. We might go some places together. We might get in my time machine, which we have done before. You and I, we sit in this thing. And this is how I imagine it. I imagine it's a physical thing. And it's kind of a box with some seats in it. Are there dials? No, it's like because it's so, the technology is sort of transcendent, right? You know, there's no, it's beyond dials and buttons and everything. It's metaphysical. And we sit in there and we get into a certain state. And then we walk out and we are literally in another time. And I've taken you to the 1950s and we met Dorothy Kilgallen or something. I don't remember, but we've done that sort of thing. We've gone into the past. I did one where we went and visited the gangs of New Jersey. It was like the gangs in New York with the Scorsese, but it was the New Jersey version. So you can imagine. What? I like it better. Always like, I like the New Jersey version of things better. Why is that? Well, I don't know. You know.
No.
You do. You know. Oh, bless you. I feel like my show is New Jersey. That's how I feel about it. Sometimes I feel like I am New Jersey. And part of me is going like, oh, it's Taylor Ham. And I'm going, pork roll, you idiot. I feel that inner conflict, right? And I just feel like, you know, my nose is Newark, and I don't know, my genitals are Camden. But it's just like, we all embody so many different things. And they are often in conflict, and it's hard to know what's going on. But I would like to welcome you to a shared delusion. And we can imagine things together. And why wouldn't that be real? You know? And the crazy religious people, good gosh, they don't mind doing it. So I feel like anyone can, you know? The invisible live here right along with us. And they have the substance that we give them. And we create ghosts. I'm going to create one right now. Let's create one together. Let's make a tulpa. I don't want to stress ourselves out too bad. But let's make somebody together.
Who?
Oh, hey, Lou.
Hey.
We were just talking about creative beings that don't have any actual substance.
Oh. That sounds familiar.
Yeah, right? So, you're probably wondering how it's done.
Not really. I don't want to have some kind of thought that then annihilates me.
Oh, I know where you're coming from. So, if you say, what if my existence is contingent on me believing I exist, and then I suddenly don't believe it, and then poof.
Exactly.
You and I. Well, we have Lou. We have Lou, and we have Butchie, and we have Don, and those are all creative beings. And there's no reason that it can't be your created being, too. You see what I'm saying? Well, Don is your creation, or Lou is your creation, Hardy. That's insane. I don't believe that for a minute. I don't, it isn't some part of my art I've commodified or something. You can steal anything. We can all do that. That's not how we...
Well, how do we prevent?
Not a lot of preventing that you can actively do.
Oh, my goodness, then what should we do? Maybe we share too much with strangers. Maybe
we need intimate connections. Maybe you need to show up and earn trust of others. Then we can do things. It's every time we're disconnected, that's how you dehumanize. It's really people you got to see all the time. It's a little harder. So you may not like the people you have to work with and everything, but boy, they keep you honest because you got to maintain some kind of... But here's what I object to. You should be able to have influence in their lives. They should be able to have to take you seriously. So all these crazy people that you work with sometimes... You should be able to have to get together, and they should have to hear you out, too. That's how real community works. Unfortunately, we're shoved together in certain instances, and then everybody goes home and believes their wacky separateness, and sometimes it involves dehumanizing people they work with. And I can't even imagine that. You know, I have to, once I see you and know your name and accept your humanness, boy, I can't imagine strangers talking me into hating you. I'm glad that that's weird to me. Boy. Because that would make what an awful place that would make. And I believe that all of you are committed to doing something different than that. And being part of Hardy's Tour. Yeah, man. Yeah, make it about me. I would say build me up and aggrandize me. No, wait till I'm dead. Then do it, though. Then you can have it. No, you can take it now. I don't care. I care and I don't care. As long as you include me. So you can steal something from me as long as I can keep access to it. And then we can both use it together. And then you have to see me all the time I come with it. That's the good kind of stealing. Oh, you stole this. Guess who's attached to it? Guess who's in your life now? Now I have influence. Now you must look me in the eye. Oh, I love you. That's a good thing. I'm committed to it. I'm committed to insisting that my humanity be dealt with. I'm going to walk around. I don't care how undignified I look. I have internalized my dignity. And I understand it, and I've given it to others. And I'm walking around like you all have that in you. And am I deluded? It's yes. Please, come with me and be deluded. Let's all pretend. Pretend ourselves into beauty. Pretend ourselves into compassion. Pretend ourselves into peace. We can pretend ourselves into just about anything because we've pretended ourselves into all sorts of horrors. So, let's crazy ourselves out of it. Oh, I'm ready. Oh my goodness. That's my secret weapon. And my camouflage is just I'm confusing and easily dismissed. And that, I hope you can get there someday, because then I feel like you can sneak in here and there, right? You know, sneak into people's consciousness. I wonder if there aren't, like, you know, the whole Citizen Kane, and he has that tender memory that's sort of at the heart of things. He still remembers that sled and that joy, that little seed of something, of humanity, is still there. I always think that about maybe like Mr. Rogers, maybe even really horrible people or something, have seen love or kindness demonstrated, and it haunts them a little bit, that they have that in there lurking, and that it can be discovered through getting inside of them. Get inside of them like a docent. Come on, I'm invasive. I'm like one of those ghosts in those movies, like Ghost Dad or something. I'm going to move into you. Poof. Oh, a ghost just went through me. Oh, they got two TV shows like that. Ghosts walking through people go, ooh, I felt it. There's one ghost that she's high. She's high on hallucinogens. And when she walks through people, they get giddy. And because they get high. But here's the thing, though. But she's like a 60s ghost on that weak-ass weed. So I don't know what's going on there. I think they're just pretending. But she could be tripping. I don't know. She could be tripping or something. That's no joke. So if a tripping ghost walks through you, the acid hippie just walked through me. I feel like that. Then I check my blood pressure. I go, it's probably just I got to take some lisinopril or something. I am so lucky that we are friends. You know, it's so what a lonely existence it can be without others. And if you don't have many friends, I would say just keep lowering the bar, lower your standards, just keep lower and lower and lower and lower. And then you will have, at some point, you'll hang out with people. You just have to. The problem is a lot of times we just don't have the friends we think we deserve. But just imagine it's like. Did you ever see Freaks? Freaks is a good, I don't know if it's a good movie, but I love the idea of community in sideshow, like, you know, circus sideshow stuff, where everybody is sort of an outcast. And the only other time I saw that dynamic was in that We Are the World documentary. That was like Freaks. And the reason that was like Freaks is because everybody was like a superstar. And that's freakish too, because you don't have a lot of peers. So then when you're in a room with them, it's just like, oh my gosh, you also get stared at when you go out in public. So We Are the World is very much like Freaks. And Schlitzy is like Bob Dylan, I would say. So anybody who, there's someone right now, bless your heart, I can hear your belly laugh. And I can tell how old you are and what your income is. But I know that you enjoyed that joke. Oh, I love you so much. You know how much joy that gives me? Right, Hardy? You're commenting right now, all my commenters. We're not yours. I don't care. I know you're there regardless who said it. Doesn't matter. Bless you. That's community, too. And you're all so much part of it. And I love you in this new year going forward. I just want to acknowledge. At first, you know, I wouldn't read the comments. I was so scared when I started years ago in 2012 was when I started. And I didn't want to look at the comments because I was scared that people were going to make fun of me and everything, and it was going to be hard. And everyone was supportive and lovely and continue to be. And I'm just so blessed for that, and the way that turned me on to different parts of the radio station. And I just love it. And if you're listening, that means you're a certain type of person, too. Not, at least you're not closed-minded. And you might have opinions, but you understand that other people do, too. And that is a blessed first step, at least. So thank you, commenters, specifically. I really do appreciate you, and thank you for tolerating me and my ignorance and anything foolish I may have said, because, you know, if you speak for any amount of time, just the amount of foolishness that will drop from your lips, so really you should be constantly, if I was a lecturer, I would be constantly apologizing. And I'd be thinking, oh, even if I was doing math, it said, like, I know, like, a lot of what I'm saying is wrong. So I won't just say that is my art. I know a lot of this show is wrong. I know that sometimes it's abstract. Sometimes I am inarticulate. Sometimes I use language for the opposite of what it's meant for. What does that mean? Well, a lot of people think it needs to convey information, and I don't necessarily think it needs to convey information. Sometimes I think it can be information neutral. And what's information neutral? So let's say I was using language for something other than communicating. So I just started saying. Now that's funny. Now it's an art piece. But the minute I start making a pattern, I've made something. I'm making something cogent. So I've got to ruin it again. So that process of robbing something constantly, it's like in meditation where you're trying to get to thinking nothing, but there's thoughts all popping in your head. And really what you're doing is just tamping down thoughts constantly, thinking until you're not thinking. And I do that with language sometimes. I do it on purpose. And well, it sounds like sometimes incompetence. It's indistinguishable. You don't experiment and succeed regularly. That's not what experimenting is. If you're looking for that, you need to go to the success arts. These are the experimental arts. And what happens here is that about 90% of what we make in the test tubes blows up unexpectedly. You are here in case that we turn lead into gold. Just that once. And then you would have been here. But you have to show up. You have to go to the crazy alchemy place. The Crazy Alchemy Cafe? Okay. Regularly. Or you'll never get your gold. You are listening to Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White on WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope 91.9 in Rockland County in New York City, New York, and online at WFMU.org worldwide. Oh, thank you for joining me, and I will see you again next week.
Thank you. Thank you.